This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by AMD, a semiconductor design innovator leading the next era of vivid digital experiences with its groundbreaking AMD Fusion Accelerated Processing Units. AMD's graphics and computing technologies power a variety of devices, including PCs, game consoles, and supercomputers in the world's largest and most prestigious national labs, research institutions, and private enterprises. For more information, visit www.amd.com/HPC.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Supercomputer beats humans at their own game.
HPC vendors on the comeback.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for February 18th, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, we watched an exciting week in supercomputing on television this week.
You won the bet, Michael. I owe you a dollar, whatever we bet.
A dollar? I thought it was more than that. Heck.
Well, maybe you hit the daily double.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your computers are good at finding those.
Yes. Yeah. Watson did great work for me over the first 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. He won the Jeopardy match against Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter decisively. I didn't even think it would be that decisive. I guess the two-game total was like 77,000 for Watson, and Jennings and Rutter were at 20-some thousand apiece. Jennings came in second, so your guy got the silver at least. But it was a decisive win for Watson.
It was decisive, although not so runaway that I'm embarrassed about it. The second match that was broadcast on Wednesday was actually much closer and could have swung on whether Watson or Jennings found the last daily double. Watson made a bet on Final Jeopardy, and Ken Jennings kind of didn't because he was playing for second place, or a Watson miss at that point.
Right.
So if it had been a little closer, you would have seen a different Final Jeopardy strategy. But the second game they played was actually much more competitive. It was much closer.
Yeah, I think so, too. In fact, at the very beginning, during the first round of that, Jennings was ahead by a pretty good margin. And then Watson just started coming back and answering a lot of the questions in the Double Jeopardy round, like he did in the second day. The Double Jeopardy seemed to be a good session for Watson on both days. And in fact, on the first day, he had actually just drawn to a tie in that first Jeopardy session.
Right.
So
right.
It's not like he was dominating all the time, but Watson dominated in general and got on these streaks where he was just untouchable and just started racking up points, and the humans were there and they looked sort of bewildered, and they didn't quite know what to do, and it was an impressive thing to see that computer answer those obscure clues so rapidly.
It was very impressive. You're right. And I think there was a big advantage in the Double Jeopardy rounds, which tend to be slightly harder questions, and the humans aren't going to be ready to buzz in right away. And Watson was just as fast on the harder questions. Its accuracy was about the same between the two rounds, but it maintains its speed, and that becomes a big advantage in the harder rounds, I thought.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised. I mean, I read some things. People were thinking that Watson had this natural advantage because it could buzz in so quickly. I mean, it was a physical buzz in they had to set up to keep it even. But people thought that it had the advantage because it sort of could electronically initiate that. But I noticed a lot of times where Jennings or Rutter buzzed in, Watson actually had the right answer because they showed it at the bottom of the screen. He had the answer, but he just didn't buzz in time. So I don't think there was a real advantage to the fact that he could. Sometimes he was actually outperformed by the humans.
If the human is ready to go at the time you're ready to buzz in, they could beat Watson to the buzzer, but Watson was very fast, and the human has to be ready with it. As soon as the human stops to think at the end of the question, if there's any delay, the human would get beat.
Right.
There's also, you know, some gamesmanship in the fact that there's two people and only one computer. So if you had something that the humans were better at, then, you know, theoretically they split those somehow. And ones that the computer's better at, it's getting all of them. But I don't think that that's something you want to, you know, correct for. It's a game, and, right. and they're in there playing it.
And even if you added Jennings winnings to Rudder's, they wouldn't even come close to Watson. I think they'd come at like 50K, but...
Well, they would have if they'd bet on Final Jeopardy at the end. It would, if you change the ratios, then it becomes a different game, right? Because
yeah.
then they can bet in order to try to get into it.
Okay.
So I think it does make some difference, but that's presuming you could add those scores together, which isn't necessarily a good assumption either.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Well, we saw a couple of times when Watson went a little loopy, too. Some things that it did well and some things it didn't do quite as well. As many people in the popular press beyond us have pointed out.
Right. There was one point where the category was U.S. cities, and there was a sort of an obscure clue, and Watson guessed Toronto as that city. And I think that was a Final Jeopardy.
Final Jeopardy of the first game. It was a question about airports. I actually talked to someone at IBM about that who clued me in that Watson had been specifically programmed to discount the information that shows up in the categories because the categories are so often misleading. Mm. And a lot of the categories that Watson had trouble with, not only that Final Jeopardy, which was the most obvious one, but other things like decades or some of the literature categories where it wasn't putting the appropriate boundary condition on the responses in order to do the analysis. And it was, as a result, searching way too many things and sometimes coming up with an answer that fell out of bounds of the original category.
Yeah, well, that sort of brings up the fact that, you know, even though this looked very impressive, I mean, Watson represents what people are calling soft AI, not hard AI, artificial intelligence. It's
right.
It's not something where the computer can go in and understand the context of that category and know when or when not to apply it. There's an algorithm there, but it's not sophisticated enough to resemble sort of a human's intelligence way to correlate that. So as right. impressive as it was, it's really just the beginning. But at the beginning, it's done remarkably well.
That's exactly right. And the way it's doing it is not really by parsing all of the information, but by building association maps of all the different words and terms. And if it's giving a smaller weight to the words that show up in the category and it wasn't stressing the U.S. in U.S. cities, it did come up with a city. But it didn't realize that it had to constrain restrain its answer to U.S. cities. In the end, the answer I was most impressed with was that it got Final Jeopardy right on the second day, where your category was something like 19th century authors or something like that, and it came up with the correct answer, who was Bram Stoker, when I thought that association could have easily led it to incorrectly answer with the name of the novel, with Dracula.
Right. I noticed at different points I was amazed at how well it knew what it was looking for. Just in the obscure clues, sometimes it would be hard to tell for, especially a computer, it would be hard to think, well, do they want the name of the thing or the person or the date or what? But it was remarkably good at figuring out what it wanted.
Yeah.
And that
the only time it consistently had trouble with that was on the decades, because you know, the name the decade category, it wasn't finding the association. You know, here's something that happened in 1923, and you're also telling me something else that happened in 1928, and it wasn't making the connection that you want a decade and both these things happened in the 20s.
Yeah, I noticed that a couple times too, right.
But these are all things they can improve in Watson 2.0, and next time we go to the doctor, Watson can diagnose us, right?
Right. Yeah. It looks like, at least for the time being, Watson won't be on the game show circuit. It's going to be sort of retooled to do medical diagnostics with some partners IBM has set up. And it's going to be doing medical diagnostics in conjunction with a program to help doctors diagnose different illnesses, not as its own doctor, but to help a team of other doctors do that. So that'll be an interesting application and one we've talked about, and it looks like it's going to be pretty good at this. So it'll be interesting to follow that story as it develops.
Yep. As I said on the last podcast, I think this is very relevant artificial intelligence technology. I think we will continue to see a continuation from this into specific industries. I don't know that it'll be off the game show circuit entirely. I follow Ken Jennings' Twitter feed, and Jennings has challenged Watson to a rematch, but this time on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, I think he'd get that one. That's a good one.
Now, I haven't seen Jennings dance, so...
Well, I think it's going to be better than those Power 750 servers, though, I'm guessing. Yeah.
Well, we've got some other news on the vendor side, looking at some market dynamics. Why don't we take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about some of the HPC vendors who might be on the comeback.
AMD Opteron processors and GPU technology have historically powered supercomputers in the world's largest and most prestigious national labs, research institutions, and private enterprises. The AMD Opteron processor gives customers the best price per performance per watt. Customers get 12 cores at 6 cores power envelope, making AMD's 4P servers more affordable to the mainstream. AMD's innovative server solutions can help customers meet real-world workload needs, including business infrastructure, collaboration web and cloud computing, virtualization and databases. Visit www.amd.com/HPC to learn how AMD is taking HPC to new heights.
So, Michael, a couple of companies in the news this week. Cray, we're coming back to that story. We had a few weeks ago said that they preliminarily announced that they would have a profit for the year, and they've come back and they've done it decisively. And although it's not a full year result, we also had SGI doing quarterly results that are better than we've seen in a little while. Let's talk about Cray first.
Right. Cray announced officially this week that they netted $15 million for the year, and on a record $319 million in revenue. So it's a big year and a profit that they haven't enjoyed since 2003. So this is
right.
This is big news for Cray and well-deserved. They've been having good years over the last 3 years. They've missed profitability by small amounts based on, you know, some other things that they were doing to get their financial house in order. But this year was official. They got an official profit, and that's great news for Cray, and they think there's big things ahead for them in 2011.
Yeah, to me, this is indicative of some real work that they've done in order to consolidate lines of business into a proper business unit structure, including things like their custom engineering side of the house, which is now handling a lot of their government one-off sort of business, but they can do that in the constructs of its own business unit. And then at the other extreme, taking things like the CX1, they haven't cut it off, but they've right-sized that business to where the costs for it are in line with the revenue that it's generating. All of these things are contributing to an overall profit for the company.
Yeah, exactly right. And I'd like to come back to the custom engineering component. They just introduced this business unit 3 years ago in 2008, and it started out fairly small, $10 million the first year, and then it ballooned to $30 million the second year, and this year it did $62 million. And if you look at that, their product side has been flat or growing slowly, and they expect it to be flat this year, but their custom engineering has been growing at a healthy rate. That's sort of been the margin of difference to like push them into profitability, certainly this year or certainly in 2010 and hopefully this year as well. So it's been a big successful introduction on Cray's part, and I know Peter Ungaro is very bullish about what's going to happen in custom engineering. They're not going to grow it by 100% as they did from 2009 to 2010, but he thinks they'll do double-digit growth in 2011, certainly.
So not just the business news, but also in terms of a forward outlook, Cray just announced that they got their first system sale of the next generation XMT to the Swiss.
Right. They announced this morning the Swiss Supercomputing Center is going to buy their next generation XMT, which is XMT2, which is going to be released later this year. And, right, they announced they're going to buy one of those systems. They pre-ordered it, not
Right.
Not any details on the size of that system or exactly what it costs or anything. But good news for Cray, they've put a lot of effort into the XMT, again, under the custom engineering umbrella, and they expect to have some interesting opportunities unfold in 2011 and further down the line. So this is good news that they have some initial interest.
And outside the U.S. government also, the fact that it's in Europe, I think, is significant. You know, you've got Cray with its expanding presence, and, you know, it's going to take more than one system to keep it going, but this is certainly a good sign.
It is. And when I talked to Peter Angara, the CEO, about Cray's situation, he was saying the foreign interest in their systems is sort of on the upswing there. They have a lot more interest from outside North America, Asia, Europe. Well, they've sold to Brazil as well. I mean, all places. Those systems tend to close a little slower than maybe systems in the U.S., but the interest is up, and he's kind of bullish on being able to expand sort of internationally more so in the past. And I think the Swiss system is sort of an example of some of the more international flavor we're going to see from some of the Cray sales.
Well, Cray, of course, is dedicated to the HPC space. Another company that's primarily HPC is SGI. And now this isn't a full year result. It's only a one quarter result, but they also at least posted a good quarter.
Right. A couple of weeks ago, they announced their second fiscal quarter, which ended at the end of December of last year. They turned up a small profit, but nonetheless, a profit of $3 million and change to the bottom line. And that was a big change from the loss they've been experiencing. I think the previous year in that quarter was $23 million in loss. So this is good
news
for
that.
Said in
their press release that this was the best quarter in SGI's history, which I thought was a dubious statement. I don't know which SGI they mean. Do they mean the current incarnation post-Rackable merger, or do they mean historical Rackable? They certainly couldn't possibly mean historical SGI. That was almost a $4 billion company at one point. At one point had a $1 billion quarter. So that's certainly not the claim. But at any rate, they're coming back at some level, or at least for one quarter they did. It's hard to say they're all the way back.
Yeah, right. It's one quarter, but they've shown some strength lately, and they do have better revenue growth in the past few quarters. So based on this, they're actually looking to now post a profit for the year. Now, whether that'll happen or not, you know, remains to be seen. They've got a couple more fiscal year quarters to go, but
right.
It's good news. I mean, most of SGI, even though they've merged with Rackable, which is mostly business-oriented, is HPC. So we're seeing Cray, now SGI, with good quarters and sort of better quarters than they've had in a long time, better years than they've had in a long time. So I don't know, do you think this is an indication that the HPC industry and market is rebounding, you know, strongly right now, or at least in 2010?
I think it is an indication that people are spending a little more money on HPC now. And, you know, a lot of times when you go through these little recessions, there's a pent-up demand for HPC that the sales don't get lost entirely. They do come back, and you get a bit of an echo boom, and those help companies like Cray and like SGI. Cray in particular was engineering a lot of its comeback during pretty rough economic conditions and deserves maybe an extra credit point or two for that. And now that things seem to be thawing out again a little bit, should be a little easier for Cray or SGI to compete. But it goes beyond those companies too. Even Dell posted a really good quarter, you know, now they've got a lot of PC business and everything else, but I think a lot of that was in their server line.
Right.
IBM seems to be doing pretty well. HP seems to be doing pretty well. So in answer to your question, I think the market is warming up a bit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens the rest of this year. The stimulus money, certainly in the U.S., is going to be drying up. So the big government contracts that resulted from that stimulus won't be there down the line. Other countries, I think, are sort of in the same boat. They're sort of retracting, pumping money into the economy in this way. So there might be sort of another rebound in the other direction that the government's going to pull back a little bit. Maybe this will filter down to demand for at least the top-end supercomputers. I'm not sure.
Well, let's take one more break and then come back with sort of a stat of the week discussion, and that'll be specific to some of the vertical markets and where we're seeing some of the growth.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Advanced Micro Devices, an innovative technology company dedicated to collaborating with customers and technology partners to ignite the next generation of computing and graphic solutions at work, home, and play. For more information, visit www.amd.com/HPC.
Well, Michael, we talked about Cray and SGI on the comeback and some of the government spending, but of course, more than half of HPC spend is on the commercial side. So I've got a question for you. Can you name the top three commercial vertical markets in order of how much they spend?
Top three verticals. So I'm going to guess financial services, bio, and I don't know, well, government, but I guess you're saying excluding government?
Out of commercial ones,
out of
right.
Commercial. So
you got two out of the top three. The one you're missing is actually the largest one is manufacturing.
Okay.
But that's assuming you combine both large product and consumer product manufacturing. Finance is very close, and finance is actually a very large opportunity that could outgrow manufacturing and could become the biggest one by the end of our forecast period, depending on how fast manufacturing grows as well with some of the missing middle. But I'm mentioning it because we've just put out a detailed research report on the applications and end users in the finance space. This is an area that we're researching a lot more this year with our newest analyst, Sue Korn, who comes to us from the finance industry.
Well, that's interesting to know. Yeah, there's going to be some Wall Street on HPC conference coming up, and there's going to be some interest about that. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how well that particular vertical will be doing this year. I mean, the financial services industry, obviously, there's been a lot of volatility. From what I've heard, at least anecdotally, that even through this last recession, the financial services industry is very healthy, and then the right. HPC vendors have profited from that enormously. So,
I think the really important point is that there's a lot of different application types in finance that need to be considered. You know, high frequency trading gets a lot of the attention right now, but we outline really four different categories these applications fall into. Trading is one of them, including high frequency trading and algorithmic trading. Then you have the whole risk management category. There's a lot of Monte Carlo stuff that goes into risk management, of course. The third category is pricing and valuation of securities and derivatives. And the fourth category is analytics. And it's not like you can even draw hard walls between all these things. They feed into one another. But by the time you include all of those different application areas for HPC, it's actually quite a large opportunity.
Yeah, I know the vendors are very interested in this area. That's where the money is, as they say.
Well, one of our big conclusions or pieces of advice to vendors is that this is an area where you really have to speak the language properly to take advantage of the opportunity. If you go in and say, "Show me your HPC systems," you get a lot of blank stares. You got to go in and be able to talk about, you know, show me your systems for value at risk, right?
Right.
That's the language you need to speak.
Well, Addison, great show today. Interesting news, obviously, with Watson, Cray, and SGI. Hopefully next week we'll have some more news to talk about. And until then, we'll see you next week.
Great. Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.